Welcome to Office Hours in Zhengzhou, China. You may recognize this park. This is the People's Park. I was here a year ago on my first trip to China with Eve, going to her hometown. This is her hometown. It's kind of like the Chicago of China, middle of the country, about 13 million people, much bigger than, you know, you and I have never heard of Zhengzhou before, but it turns out to be this massive city. Lots of tourism, one of the birthplaces of history here, a lot of history museums. So this is the second stop on our tour. So far, we've also been to Beijing. I originally wanted to record an episode of Office Hours on the Great Wall. I brought my camera gear on. It didn't even take 30 seconds before I was like, no, this isn't going to work, because there were so many people there. Oh my gosh, it was overwhelming. Just a huge number of people, all kinds of stuff going on. Kids, the elderly walking around. It was really impressive. Sometimes you'll see these staged like tourism photos of the Great Wall, and there's hardly anybody there. That is staged for tourism. That place is absolutely hopping. On the rest of this tour, we're also doing Shanghai, Osaka, Kyoto, and Tokyo as well. So let's see what y'all have going for your top voted. Oh, it's going to, on this particular session, I'm probably going to have to frequently refresh my PollGab page, because I keep losing connectivity. My connectivity right here at this spot isn't the greatest. Cornfield DBA asks, hi Brent, we're considering installing SQL Server 2022 alongside of 2019. According to Microsoft, this is supported. Have you ran two versions on the same host? Is there anything I should be worried about? I wouldn't do this under any circumstances, period. It is a recipe for a performance nightmare, because it's going to be really hard to do fine-grained control of how much CPU and how much memory and how much storage throughput is used by each of the instances. Whenever you find yourself wanting to run multiple instances of SQL Server, the answer you usually want is virtualization, so that then you can do that fine-grained control of resources at the VM level, rather than trying to do it inside of SQL Server itself. Does cost you a little bit more, because you're probably going to be doing it with Enterprise Edition licensing and licensing at the host level instead of licensing each guest with standard, although you can do that. But that, just from a pure performance perspective, that's the place that I would always go. I have never had a situation for a client where I recommended instant stacking of different versions on the same guest or on the same server. Next up, AG Avoider asks, goodness, I'm going to have to refresh my connection again. Wow, this is going to be pretty ugly here. Just a second. Let me go pop into that. AG Avoider says, I've heard you mention synchronous SAN replication across data centers. Is this different from multi-subnet failover clustering? Yes. Multi-subnet failover clustering, you're typically talking about automatic failover from one place to another, and you generally don't want to do automatic failover across data centers. Because then what happens if you have a SQL Server failover? Now suddenly your SQL Server is in a different data center. Your apps probably did not fail over. So you're suddenly going to have terrible latency trying to query a SQL Server that lives in another data center. Then, of course, there's the problematic, how do you keep up to speed sending data across data centers between the two SQL Servers as well? Generally, automatic failover for multi-subnet failover clustering is a giant pain in the rear or a non-performant pain in the rear. I don't recommend that. You also mentioned, your question was about synchronous SAN replication. That immediately makes me stop and go, wait, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Are you trying to solve an HA problem or a DR problem? If you go to brentozar.com and you do our free download of the scripts, in there, there's an HA and DR worksheet where you put in your high availability and disaster recovery RPO and RTO goals. Do that, and then that'll help you understand which technologies make the most sense for your particular goals. Next up, I'm going to have to refresh the page again. It's funny. I mean, you can work with a cell connection in China, but with a foreigner cell connection, it's not nearly as good as what the natives get. I just happened to buy a Huawei phone yesterday that I've always wanted. They're tri-fold phones, and the cell phone connection on that is so much better using Chinese native SIMs as opposed to the American ones. Next up, newbie dev DBA says, "Hi Brent, my boss wants us to encrypt some columns. My colleague brought up a specific kind of encryption. Have you had any experience with it?" I don't do any security work at all, period, full stop. It's just not something that I'm interested in. It doesn't bring me joy, it doesn't make me happy, so I just don't do that. It's kind of like cleaning. I hire a housekeeper for that. Not that housekeepers should be doing database security. SQL HC DBA says, "Do you have documentation on how to configure reporting services on AGs?" Nope, I don't do reporting services either. And I think the more senior you become, you have to make a choice in your career. Do you want to be a generalist trying to do everything? Or do you want to specialize in specific things that you love to do or that bring you a lot of money in? When you're just getting started with consulting and contracting, it's tempting to think that you have to know everything. The problem with it then, though, is you're competing with everyone. If you're known as the person who does everything, well, so is everybody else, and you're competing with the lowest common denominator there. And you're never really good at any one particular thing. Whereas if you specialize, if you think of yourself as like a surgeon, like a specific kind of surgeon or a specific kind of lawyer, if you go to hire a lawyer, it's not like you hire the same lawyer to defend yourself for murder that you would for patent investigations or for a question about an HOA. You end up specializing in specific areas, and that's how they make more money. That's what you should do as well. Now, I'm not saying that, telling you not to do reporting services work. Maybe you specialize in doing reporting services work on top of AGs, but I'm just helping frame that as why, when you go to get advice for that kind of thing, you're probably going to have to go to a specialist, somebody who blogs a lot about reporting services. And I don't think there is one. I don't think I've seen that, which can also tell you that it could be an opportunity for you if you wanted to become that person, although probably not reporting services, since reporting services is kind of dead. Let's see here. Let's go refresh our connection again and get the next question. So the next question is, Elwood asks, "What's worse, installing cumulative updates as soon as they come out or installing them months later?" So for me, what I would like to do is whenever a cumulative update comes out, I want to immediately go put it in my dev environments, like dev and quality assurance testing environments, so that my developers can be banging on it, my QA testers can be banging on it. I don't expect them to do anything specific to that CU, but it just helps me get time in having it in my environment and know that nothing truly crazy is happening. Plus, give me like 30 days before then I'm going to schedule the next production or DR outage and then go install it from there. So I would tend to be 30 to 60 days behind just from a deployment perspective. Dev first, then QA, then DR, then production. Land of the Lost asks, "What's your opinion of SQL Server 2025's mirroring to Fabric OneLake feature?" Okay, so that's still, I think, in preview. I'm not 100% sure if that's in preview or not. It's been a while since I looked at that. So I don't have any clients using Fabric. I don't have any clients using Fabric at all in any kind of production capacity. I have clients who have tried Fabric and then have kind of walked it back and said, this isn't a great fit for me. I'm going to go use something else instead. That is not to say anything bad about Fabric, but I just don't have any experience with it whatsoever. Having said that, if you were going to use it, I would be very excited about the mirroring feature because it's supposed to be lower overhead than traditional methods of keeping data in sync from one place to another. So I would be excited about it. I would just make it clear to the teams that I'm not here to support Fabric. I don't know anything about it. But if you want to use it, and if we're on 2025, I'd be glad to put in that feature for you, even if it's in just preview mode, because I hear good things about that particular, the mirroring feature. All right, let's refresh this one, grab the next. Are you tired of that yet? I'm certainly tired of that. Be nice if I didn't have to do that, but this is what happens when you travel. Wade Wilson asks, will you be attending Microsoft SQLCon in Atlanta next year? No, but I almost did. It just ended up that I didn't have the time to get a good set of submissions in. I'm in the midst of trying to write what submissions I want to do for conferences in 2026, and I didn't have enough time to do a good enough job on SQLCon. And because the call for speakers ended like a month ago, and I just couldn't pull it off in time. Also, I'll be honest with you, Atlanta isn't a place that I really want to go as a tourist. It's easy to fly in and out of, but the traffic's kind of a hot mess. The city's really spread out. It's hard to get from one place to another. It's not necessarily easy as a tourist. And these days, I'm at the point where if I'm going to travel somewhere, it'd either better be a banging conference, like SQL Bits is a banging conference, or it had better be in a place that I want to go in a time when I want to go there. Nothing against SQLCon. It's a startup conference for Microsoft is kind of trying to start up an alternative to the past summit. But nothing against it. If it works out for you schedule-wise, and if it has technologies that you're interested in, by all means, I don't have any problem with it. It doesn't have the banging reputation that like SQL Bits does around parties afterwards, get-togethers, pub quizzes, relationship-building type things. It's more of a buttoned-up corporate-y conference, which is fine. There's space for all kinds of conferences in the SQL Server business. I always feel bad when I say that I'm not going to something. If I had unlimited time and unlimited money and I was single, not that I'm going to conferences trying to hook up, but when you have families, you know, that starts to limit how much time you want to spend away from home. It's not like I can tell my partner, hey, look, let's go to Atlanta. This is a place that you're really going to want to go. Not really. And people at Atlanta are like, you're not that wrong. It's a cool city to live in if you can, you know, kind of confine yourself to one particular part of Atlanta, but that's not my bag. It's not my bag. I could live the rest of my life and not go to Atlanta again. I know I'm kind of digging myself a hole here, but I that's true. It's the way I feel, though. It's spread out. The traffic's horrible. It doesn't have anything that I can't get from other locations. So it's a real tough thing. I'd say the same thing. Like if somebody held a conference in LA, you know, where it takes 2-3 hours to get anywhere via car, I'd say the same kind of thing. Lots of cities I feel that way about. Next up, my tea got cold says, do you know of any monitoring tools that still get regular updates? Spotlight and Sentry look dead. I'm not sure about Idera. I don't know where you got that. Okay, so there's two things to it. Is Spotlight and Sentry dead? Sentry got acquired by SolarWinds, and I think SolarWinds' plan was to replace Sentry with SolarWinds, like DPA or whatever they're calling it these days. So I don't know how quickly that acquisition's going. Spotlight, I know, just got an update, though, because they just announced 2025 compatibility plus Amazon RDS improvements. What you may want to do is search for what's new in and then the monitoring product that you're looking for, and that'll take you to the release notes. But the other thing that I would say here is, what do you expect to be different about database monitoring in the year 2026? Right? It's not like they're going to go, wait, we got this whole new idea. We got this whole new way of doing it. I have seen a couple of small startup companies that are trying to do that. They're like, wait, this one is entirely different, you know, and they're trying to put different spins on it. Like, this one is about saving you money, not about uptime. I'm like, okay. But at the end of the day, a monitoring tool is a monitoring tool. There are only so many ways that you can monitor a database. You know, what are the current bottlenecks? What's your top wait stat? Well, last night at 6 p.m., what was happening? Am I going to run out of disk space today? You know, things like that. I don't know what you would expect to be truly different. If you have ideas for things that would be truly different about that would like revolutionize the database monitoring industry, you should probably think about either going to work for a monitoring vendor or building your own monitoring tool. But I don't, I it sounds like you're expecting a revolutionary feature, and I just don't think that's going to happen in the year 2026. Which that's just pretty self-explanatory there. But I think all of them, like you should check, the first place I would start is to see if it's compatible now with SQL Server 2025. And if they do say that, then that means at least they're still doing something because that came out fairly recently. Let's see here. Speaking of monitoring, Elwood asks, our commercial monitoring software caused corruption in our database. Have you seen this or run into this? No. It is possible that because monitoring tools tend to do things that may be less documented or try to do things kind of in a hard way, that they would be more likely to cause problems. Corruption's weird though, because monitoring tools shouldn't be writing to the database and really to cause corruption. You need to be doing some writes. The only thing that I can think is if they cause something like a non-yielding scheduler or cause SQL Server to slow down. But I would drill down more deeply into what you think caused the corruption, because I don't think that it was the monitoring software. I bet you were having problems at the time, and the monitoring software was like, oh my God, there's all these problems. And the monitoring software is trying to figure things out, but I don't think that the monitoring software caused the corruption. But you should, by all means, work with the monitoring vendor to find that out, though. Because it just doesn't make sense. Monitoring tools are read-only. Brent is the man. Whoops, I got to refresh my connection again. I thought that was a quick answer, but evidently not. Let's see here. Coming in. Brent is the man says, hi, with the new ADR functionality for TempDB in 2025, I wonder if the version store for TempDB will clear out if I have long-running transactions in other databases. If you don't want to answer this because I test myself, yes, you can absolutely test this yourself. Anytime that you have a question and you know how to describe the scenario, you should probably run a test. Rather than typing in a question into some web control panel, waiting for days or weeks for me to answer it, just go run the experiment that you care about. By all means, don't pester someone else to do something that you could just go find out on your own, right? That's how you learn things. Captain asks, my queries sometimes slow down due to large version store crawling. I don't know what you mean by that. It says, but I've noticed that enforcing a clustered index scan on simpleton selects, what in the Sam hell? It says, sometimes I get better performance than with a preferred covering index seek. What trivial knowledge am I missing? So the trivial knowledge you're probably missing is get the execution plan. Get the actual execution plan, not the estimated, but get the actual execution plan and compare the two differences. Compare the two to see what the differences are. I can't even understand what you're asking, let alone like enforcing clustered index scans on simpleton selects. I don't even understand what you think a simpleton select is. That usually to me, like a simple select would be select from table where ID equals one value. That's like a simple select of pulling one single row. And then at the same time, you say a covering index seek. Well, if you have a simple select on the clustered index of a table, why would you have an index on the clustering key column? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you have two copies of the same table with the same order? That just doesn't make sense. So I think there's something that you're missing that you're not explaining well there. And it would help to have the two execution plans. Now, having the two execution plans is beyond what we're going to do in a quick Q&A conversation like this, though. But hopefully by asking the rubber duck, as they say, that's gotten you to start looking at what you mean there. Writing a good question is surprisingly hard. There's a really good art to writing a good question, whether it's a long question like you might see on Stack Overflow or a short one that you might try to put into PolGab. One of the things that I think about when I'm writing a question is I want someone else to be able to see exactly the stuff that I'm seeing. Here's the thing I did. Here's what I expect to see. Why am I not seeing that? And then that way, when they look at it, they can see, oh, you're not seeing that because here's what you did, but that's not really how to achieve this result or whatever. But otherwise, if you just like do interpretive dance, it's a lot harder to understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish. The other thing is that our vocabularies can be different. Like, I have never heard someone say that a simpleton select that involves multiple rows. My immediate thought is XTC's classic song, The Mayor of Simpleton. The simpleton select, to me, means only getting one row. And maybe to you, that means something different. Maybe you think that a simpleton select means a select with an easily understandable where clause that fetches multiple rows. Who knows? Let's see. Let's do one more question too as well. I might as well. I could do a few. I'm in an answering kind of mood today. And admin, let's see here. I say I'm in an answering mood, but I didn't get you the answer though, did I? Next up, Flyboy says, we have multiple databases that now need to integrate with each other. The issue with many of these databases is that they have different collations, which is problematic. What is your approach to changing collation for every aspect of the database? Okay. So when you say need to integrate with each other, is this a case where, so I'm gonna paint a few different pictures. What if someone came to me and said, we have these different databases and we just need to run reports across all of them, I'd say, great, we're gonna periodically pull that data in using some kind of ETL tool, some kind of extraction tool. Maybe it's SSIS, maybe it's Azure Data Factory, whatever. But we're gonna pull that data into one central database. And in that one central database, then I'm just gonna have one set of reporting tables. In that case, I'm not going to have to worry about different collations. The collations would be handled during the import process. Another way that might happen is, what happens if you have different applications that have different functionality? That, for example, one of them is a scheduling application, the other one is a payroll application, the other one is a customer application, and they need to continue to exist in their current places, but you want them to cross-join between each other. Like, maybe the payroll application needs to go get customers to figure out who to charge a product to. In that case, you're probably going to want to put collation hints on the queries whenever you need to join on string fields. Ideally, you don't join on string fields. Ideally, you would join on IDs, like numbers. But if you had to join on string columns, then you're going to have to put things like collate database default. You had said in your question, you had said, let's pull this, whoopsie. You had said, what is your approach to changing the collation for every aspect of the database, table, columns, functions, and views? I would not ever try to do that. It's a giant pain in the rear. What you would have to do, if you really want to do it and do it right, is set up a brand new database with the collations that you want, pull everything from the old database into the new database, and do that transformation on the way through so that it's all stored in the one final target collation that you want, as opposed to trying to change it in place is a giant pain in the rear. It's going to be a big, ugly, logged activity. It's going to take a long time. And because it's a one-time only thing, that's where I would rather just have a conversion, where I walk through and merge, move everything over into a new database. You're not missing some silver bullet. You're not missing something easy. Whenever you have two different collations, it is a giant pain in the rear. I personally, so I run BrentOzar.com on WordPress, and it's been in WordPress since 2000. 2000, 2001, something like that. It's been a really long time, been like 25 years. And of course, I didn't know anything about collations at the time that I set it up. I just used a WordPress default next installer where it created a bunch of tables in MySQL. And I know that the collations in there aren't right. And it doesn't support things like emoji in comments. And I've had it in the back of my mind that at some point I wanted to go through and change the collations of those tables. And I haven't bothered doing it myself either because the ROI on stuff like that is so low. All right, that's a good set of answers. We will stop there. I will go head back in and check to see what we're doing today. I honestly have no idea what we're doing today. Some of the stuff that we like to do here is the history museums are pretty awesome in Zhengzhou. It's one of the cradles of Chinese national history. So there are a lot of neat museums here and sites to see. Big sprawling city, modern parts. I know there was a point at which Eve had talked to a realtor about us getting a vacation house here, and we were going to go tour some vacation houses. But I think we're over that, like just from the last couple few days. And we're probably going to just rent stuff when we come over here. We're at the Intercontinental, one of the nicest hotels in town. Spectacular hotel. The people are wonderful here. It is the best breakfast I have ever had at any restaurant in the world. It's this giant, monstrous breakfast, all kinds of choices. And it's $70 a day. $70 US a day for this incredible, nice big room, lots of space, super modern. There's no tipping allowed. There's bell staff constantly helping with your bags and all kinds of stuff. It's just a wonderful hotel, absolutely delightful. Includes afternoon tea and the morning breakfast. It's amazing. It's absolutely spectacular. It's better than trying to like rent a house here or have a vacation house or whatever, just because it's so much nicer to have a whole staff here taking care of things and feeding you in the morning and afternoon drinks and all that. So hopefully y'all had fun and learned something, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.